from WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Yo, 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 what is up, beautiful people? It is Hump Day, June 24th, 2015, and you are tuned into Current Sports with me, Al Martin. We have a great show in store for you all. Today, we will invite Vince Ellis, Detroit Pistons beat reporter for the Detroit Free Press. Vince will talk about what the Pistons should and will do in tomorrow's NBA draft. He'll also chat about two Spartans who are hoping to make their NBA dreams come true in Brandon Dawson and Travis Trice. Both players had workouts with the Detroit Pistons, and Vince got a chance to chat with each of them. You don't want to miss that chat. It's going to be a very interesting one, to say the least. We'll also talk about Justin Verlander deciding to sit out as he feels a bit of a tweak. Yeah, just a tweak in his body. And is playing it safe, if you ask me. So you don't want to miss that chat. What does this mean for the Detroit Tigers, who are right now five-plus games in back of the Kansas City Royals in the American League Central. Excuse me, 3.5 games back. So we'll chat about that. Also, the Tom Brady appeal, which took 10 hours. Can you believe that? All of that and so much more, as well as we'll be taking your calls like we do each and every day here on Current Sports, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners again for this June 24th. Matthew Coughlin, a 2016 place kicker from Cincinnati. Moeller tweeted last night that he has committed to Michigan State. He wrote, quote, "I am excited to announce that I am officially committed to Michigan State University Spartans to continue my academic and athletic career." Coughlin would be the 20th member of the Spartans class, which is currently ranked in the top five nationally by recruiting services, but Rivals.com reported the plan is for Coughlin to take a gray shirt, which means that he would enroll in 2016, go on scholarship in 2017, and technically be a part of the 2017 class. So that's pretty interesting. It's very rare that you hear a gray shirt enacted in college football or in college sports in general. All right, linebacker Jalen Powell has requested and been granted a release from Michigan State. An athletic department spokesman confirmed Powell, a 5'11", 195-pound converted safety from Warren, Ohio, played primarily on special teams as a redshirt freshman in 2014. He switched from safety to star linebacker before MSU's Cotton Bowl win over Baylor and was listed number two behind Darian Harris in the spring. Former Detroit Cavs Tech quarterback Jayrue Campbell has signed a letter of intent with Garden City Community College, located in western Kansas. Now, on April 30th, Campbell tweeted that he had committed to a different junior college, New Mexico Military Institute in Roswell. The Broncos coach, Joe Fortuner, confirmed the commitment to the Free Press the next day. Justin Verlander will miss his start against the Cleveland Indians today because of a mid-back soreness, the Tigers said. Now, starting in his place will be right-hander Buck Farmer, who will be recalled from AAA Toledo prior to the game. Now, the Tigers don't know when the veteran right-hander will start next. He said he is hopeful it will be sometime during their upcoming four-game set against the Chicago White Sox. The Detroit Red Wings, they are in good fiscal shape for the upcoming year. The NHL and NHLPA announced that the 2015-16 salary cap, the new 2015-16 salary cap, will have an upper limit of $71.4 million. And, not that this matters to a team like the Wings, a lower limit of $52.8 million. Now, the Wings have $14 million in salary cap space for next season, though a chunk of that will be allotted to re-sign restricted free agents. The hearing of New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady's appeal of his four-game suspension in the Deflategate case ended yesterday evening after 10 hours. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell presided over the hearing despite a request from the NFL Players Association that he recuse himself. Now, Jeffrey Kessler, a lawyer for the Players Union, told reporters that Brady's team made a compelling case. After two seasons in Dallas, Monte Ellis has decided to test the market by declining his option for 2015-16. Now, according to SpotTrack, by opting out of the deal, Monte Ellis is giving up $8.72 million in salary for next year. ESPN's Chris Broussard first reported the news, adding that the Indiana Pacers and Miami Heat are interested. Now, Tim McMahon, of ESPN's Dallas confirmed the report and noted that the Dallas Mavericks do not plan to re-sign the shooting guard. And last but not least, surprise starter Adam Haseley and John Sorps combined on the shutout. Senior utility man Thomas Rutruff drove in two runs, and the Virginia Cavaliers defeated Vanderbilt 3-0 on Tuesday night, forcing a deciding Game 3 in the College World Series, which takes place today. For the second year in a row, these two teams will go the distance in the best of three finals. How about that? That should be an entertaining game today. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are open. Call 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527 to be a part of today's discussion. Go to facebook.com/currentsports, leave a comment there, or even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Without further ado, I do believe it's about that time to start the show. Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Wednesday, June 24th. Of course, each and every Wednesday, folks, I just get excited. I'm always a bit tired, I will tell you that, because it's a double duty for me on Wednesdays as I not only manned but behind the mic on Current Sports Radio, but we also tape Current Sports TV. And this afternoon, in now less than 2 hours, at 3 p.m., I'll be sitting down for the first time with Tom Saxton, who is the head coach of the Michigan State women's soccer team. And, of course, I'll be sitting down with Tom and picking his brain apart when it comes to the World Cup. Of course, the U.S. women's national soccer team, they are vying for a World Cup championship. They're good just about every time they compete in the World Cup. I mean, we all know the famed reputation that U.S. soccer here has when it comes to women's soccer, at least. The men still lag behind in that area as far as just really competing in a dominant level worldwide in the world of soccer. So, interesting stuff, because I always find that quite intriguing. I've always wondered, why is it that in women's soccer, you know, they've historically always been good and among the best. Actually, right now, looking at the FIFA world rankings, they're right behind Germany at number 2 in the world. And then when you look on the flip side of that, the men's national soccer team, I mean, they're like in the 30s somewhere. So I've always wondered that. So Tom will be sitting down with me to talk about that interesting dynamic, as well as the chances of the U.S. women's national soccer team winning a World Cup this year. A bit of a gritty game coming off against that win against Colombia. A 2-0 win that went down to the wire. It was actually tied 0-0 at halftime. And then all of a sudden you saw the U.S. really start to really just put their dominance in action. And, it could have been 1-0 at halftime, but – on Abby Weinbach goal, I believe like midway through the first half, was called off due to an offside penalty. So going to be interesting stuff. So Tom Saxton will be joining me. Again, that'll be 3 o'clock live studio audience taping at our WKAR TV studios. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, you can still show up. Again, just simply come on down here to the WKAR TV studios located on the campus of Michigan State University inside of the Communication Arts and Sciences building, the first floor. And you can also sign up online, and just it's just a matter of just showing up. So sign up online at WKAR.org. I want to invite the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's current sports, Isaac Constance. How you doing, Isaac?
I'm doing well, Al. I actually woke up this morning really excited for the NBA draft, lots of optimism, and then I just found out it was tomorrow, so I was a little killed right now.
Right, yeah, because, yeah, it's on Thursday, so you woke up thinking it was on Wednesday, huh?
I did, or maybe I thought it was Thursday today. Whatever it was, I was like, NBA draft tonight, got to wear my Pelicans cap, and then it didn't happen.
No, so save it. Save it for one more day, and exactly. It's going to be exciting. We're going to have a lot of chatter on today's show about the NBA draft and the top prospects, because we are actually inviting Vince Ellis, Detroit Pistons beat writer for the Detroit Free Press, on the show with us around the 1:30 mark. Vince has had the opportunity to be around this team, of course, when you're a reporter for the Pistons. I mean, you are in the locker room getting to chat with Stan Van Gundy and really picking his brain about what he's looking for in this year's draft. He got a chance to see, well, I don't know if he saw, but he got a chance to at least talk to Brandon Dawson and Travis Trice after their workouts with the Detroit Pistons, just trying to showcase their talent just to land somewhere. So in an interesting article, I don't know if you guys saw this, but Vince Ellis actually had an article where really one of the big reasons I wanted to have him on the show is because he did a great job putting together an article concerning Brandon Dawson and his maturity that he's saying that really just reading the title here says, quote, Brandon Dawson's maturity could carry him to a pro hoops career. And interesting because he talks a lot about the honesty that Brandon Dawson had when chatting with him and just keeping it real. And, that's just having a direct correlation with maturity. So you don't want to miss that. And also Isaac and I, on tomorrow's show, we will have our mock draft and our predictions on who we think will be, we'll do like the top 20 picks. And also, of course, we'll be really dissecting as to what the Pistons need and what they will take with the 8th pick in this year's NBA draft. Again, folks, phone lines are open 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Want to get your guys' thoughts on this one. I think it's a smart move by Justin Verlander, pitcher, of course, for the Detroit Tigers. If you didn't hear in our quick hit headliners, Justin Verlander is actually saying, hey, I'm going to just rest right now. Justin Verlander will miss his start against the Indians today because of mid-back soreness, the Tigers said. Now, starting in his place will be right-hander Buck Farmer, who will be recalled from AAA Toledo prior to the game. Now, the Tigers don't know when the veteran right-hander will start next. He said he is hopeful it will be sometime during their upcoming 4-game set against the Chicago White Sox. And I really like this move, Isaac, because first off, Justin Verlander just came back not too long ago with this team. And anytime you have one of your studs, one of your star pitchers or star players, period, going through a period where they are coming off an injury, they had an elongated time off to try and get to some sort of healthy realm. And anytime you have that player come back, if anything tweaks or feels wrong in the coming weeks or coming days, you got to be very cautious because you don't want to go down that same road that you went toward before that injury became really serious. So I think this is great. And we all know, I mean, it's still, there's a lot of games left in the baseball season. Why force a start for Justin Verlander when he's not feeling 100%?
And the other thing for the Tigers is it's not like Justin Verlander's suffering through an injury, but really pulling the team on his back. He hasn't been pitching great. He's got an ERA of 6.17 in the 2 games he's played. So, no, it's smart for JV to take the time off. You want him to come back as one of your main two starters. You don't want him to come back as a guy barely pulling number 5. And then if he plays with injuries and plays while he's hurting, that could be the rest of the season. It makes sense to come back when he's 100%, no less.
Yeah, and still, you know, looking at, really his first two starts of the year, he hasn't been lights out. I will say that. And you can kind of see that JV being on the mound, that he isn't 100% when he's been out there coming back from this injury. So, you know, it's still going to take some time for Justin Verlander to get to 100% health. And again, if he's coming to me saying, oh man, I got some stiffness in my back, I don't know, it's kind of hurting me a little bit, I am not hesitating, if I am manager Brad Ausmussen, saying, take some more time off. We need you down the stretch, not right now, to be honest. We still got a long season to play. And looking at him on the mound, I don't know if you got a chance to really look at Justin Verlander so far this year since he's come back, Isaac. But again, I'm going back to those first two starts of the year for him. Really not making many hitters miss. He's still trying to find his location on the mound. Really kind of becoming more of a contact pitcher. For me, I think that Justin Verlander, he threw 117 pitches in his last start against the Yankees and just kind of looked exhausted, if you ask me. I think that he still has a lot of leaps and bounds to make before we can say that Justin Verlander is back and should be performing at a certain level. There's still sort of an excuse or a leeway with me because he just hasn't looked 100%.
Oh, of course. I mean, this is a guy who used to throw the laces with little hot sauce and mustard. You know, he would throw it with, he could hit 100 miles per hour and everything. He's not that player anymore. He's
right,
gotten older.
Right.
We saw that in the last season as well. But especially coming off this injury, he just can't do that anymore. So he needs to learn to adapt to a new pitching style, one that might not put as much strain on his body, because he is aging. He's 32 now. He's not 28, 27 when he had his best seasons. He's now 32. So he needs to adapt to that new style, but he's not a contact pitcher either, like you said. Some pitchers can go like that, like Roy Halladay, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But Justin Verlander, he's typically gotten a fair bit of strikeouts in his career, so he needs to find a way to get the breaking balls working a little bit more, something like that, because the speed, it's declining. It really is. So
yeah, and yeah. I don't think we will ever, Isaac, see the Justin Verlander of old. I mean, there was a time, 3-4 years ago where Justin Verlander was clearly the best pitcher in baseball. I mean, in my lifetime, during that stretch, he was the best pitcher I'd ever seen. And it was really just remarkable to see that time period. I mean, he was like a headliner on ESPN just about every other day. And, when you have that sort of dominance, we all know how pitching is. There's a lot of wear and tear on your arm. And as you age, that speed slows down, that velocity slows down. So we got to be fair and honest. Just like you said, Justin Verlander will never be the same pitcher that he was back in the day, or 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. But yeah, at the same time, I still believe that he has potential to still be an elite pitcher on a nightly basis for the Detroit Tigers. And in order to give him a shot in that, you have to make sure that you keep him healthy.
Well, and what's the thing is for Justin Verlander too, you talk about those 3 or 4 years back, you look at his 2011 season. That's one of the greatest pitching seasons in recent memory. He had 24 wins, 5 losses, 250 strikeouts.
Right.
And like we said, that's not Justin Verlander anymore, but it doesn't mean he can't provide that same type of oomph and sample in less innings. You know, he's mm-hmm. going to need more rest now that he's older, but he can also provide that veteran savvy. He won't get phased by late innings or anything like that. So Justin Verlander, although he's gotten older, being a veteran isn't always a bad thing either, because
right.
we see it in every single sport. As you age, you learn the game. You learn how to play. You learn what to do in late game situations. I think that's something that Justin Verlander can definitely capitalize on.
Yeah, certainly. Now, I think with this rest now, this will give him some time to really regain that arm strength as well. Because we all know, again, as I just stated, the wear and tear that pitching naturally has on your arm. So I'm hoping that JV gets back and is healthy. And I think this is a smart decision by Brad Ausmus to rest – Justin Verlander now rather than maybe have to pay for it later on in the year. And also on that same notion, Brad Ausmus has also decided not to play first baseman Miguel Cabrera and not have him in the lineup today. He went on to say, quote, even Superman needs a day off. So Brad Ausmus is playing this thing smart. I think looking at how this team was so battered and beaten up last year, especially down the stretch, getting near the playoff time, I think he regretted not resting his guys when he could have rested them, and that hurt this team down the line. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. He's taking responsibility and realizing that if this happens again, where his team is injury-laden as the season goes on, there's no one to blame but himself. So I really like this move. And really, when looking at it, right now they're playing the Cleveland Indians, and it's an interesting race, Isaac. I don't know if you look at the standings right now in the AL Central. You got Kansas City, who's 40-28 right now. They sit atop the division. You got Minnesota in back of them at 38-33. And the Tigers at third at 37-34. Then you got the Indians at 32-38 and the White Sox at the bottom of the division at 31-39. Right now, if you remember, if we were winding this clock, last month, Isaac, the Detroit Tigers were in clear contention, which they still are, having the lead in the AL Central. Again, right now, they are 4.5 games in back of the Kansas City Royals. Again, for that top spot. This is the time of the year where you don't panic. You don't panic because you realize there are a lot more games left to play. I would say if there's a number that you have to really start raising your eyebrows at, if this thing gets anywhere close to double digits. And right now, if you're looking at the Kansas City Royals, they are coming off a loss. Minnesota Twins are coming off a loss. The Tigers are completely rolling against the Cleveland Indians right now. And they've always rolled against the Cleveland Indians. So again, if there's an opportunity to rest your guys, especially against a ball club that you have had historical dominance against, it's right now. And I wouldn't rule the Tigers out, of course. They're only 4.5 games back. This can completely change. We could be singing a different tune in a month from now.
That's true. But with the Kansas City Royals, a.k.a. the All-Star team, the way they're playing, it will be hard to usurp them on top of that AL Central crown. But at the same time, first off, it's very doable because we saw the Tigers playing so well at the beginning of this season, last season when we were talking about the Tigers being one of the best teams in baseball midway through. Mm. The Tigers, like you said, Brad Ausmus, last year the team faded down the stretch. There's no other way to put it. Just the final couple weeks of the regular season and then the playoffs, they just weren't any good anymore. So he's learned from his mistakes. This is not a bad record at this point in the season.
No, not at all.
It's
right.
Something that they can easily recover from, get into first place, second place, wherever it is, get into the playoffs, and then be at full strength, then be in contention. But until then, no, don't sound off any panic alarms or anything. The Tigers are doing just fine, and a little bit of rest isn't hurting anybody, especially now that the bats have been working recently.
And I hope we didn't just jinx them, Isaac.
Knock on wood. I'm doing it right now.
Right now, I say that because the Tigers are playing the Indians right now, and it is actually 3-0, all Indians in the bottom of the fourth. So hopefully we didn't just jinx them. But again, Buck Farmer is certainly struggling right now, to say the least. But again, this is the time of the year where you don't panic. You realize you have a ton of baseball left to play, and you just take it game by game, and you want to make sure that you keep you keep an eye on your guys to make sure that if they are feeling any sort of tweak or any sort of pain anywhere, hey, rest them. It's not worth it right now in the year. So again, and we'll keep you guys updated as we proceed on the show. Again, it's 3-0 right now. The Indians are leading the Tigers in the bottom of the fourth. Again, the phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Well, really the talk of the town in the sporting world is on, of course, Deflategate and Tom Brady. The hearing, actually, on the New England Patriots quarterback on his appeal of the 4-game suspension in that case ended yesterday evening after 10 hours. That's a long, long time, Isaac. First off, for 10 hours, they must have went through that entire report detail by detail, text message by text message, because that's a long time to be in a hearing.
I have trouble staying awake during some of my 2-hour classes. 10 hours?
I'm telling you, man.
Court cases?
And
wow.
Is that 10 straight hours that they were debating this whole thing?
I'd imagine they had a break for lunch or something like that.
That's unbelievable.
That's it.
That's crazy. That's unbelievable. Yeah, 10 hours. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, of course, he presided over the hearing despite a request from the NFL Players Association that he recuse himself. But Jeffrey Kessler, a lawyer for the Players Union, told reporters that Brady's team made a compelling case. And that's really the thing I've been reading at when looking at those who have been reporting on this appeal. I'm hearing a lot of chatter that Tom Brady went in there and made a convincing case as to this suspension being reduced. As far as the details of that is yet to come out. Tom Brady hasn't talked to the media concerning what exactly went down in the hearing, but we do expect that very, very soon. But if anything, and you and I, to close yesterday's show, both agreed that we do see this suspension being, you know, cut from 4 games to 2. Just because, first off, for me, the reason I think so is because, first off, we're talking about Tom Brady here. He's a guy who, in his past, when you look at his past, he has had no on-record quarrels about anything, you know, during his playing career. He's been the goody-two-shoes. He has been the golden boy of the league. He's been the most marketable player in the NFL for quite some time now. Clearly, the best quarterback in the league. He's such a recognizable figure and is such a storied figure for the NFL that 4 games, you know, can be looked at as maybe a bit too harsh for a first offense, even though it goes against what the NFL or sports is all about. You know, you were clearly caught cheating. These are the rules. You broke the rules. Again, it may not have made such a big difference in that AFC Championship game against the Indiana Colts because it was a complete blowout. But again, it's one of those things where it went against the rules within the game. That's one of those things where it can directly affect how a game is played and gives you a sort of an upper hand or advantage if a ball is underinflated. How much of an advantage, that's up for debate. But at the same time, that's why this story got so much attention. You were caught cheating within the game. Now, again, this is the golden boy. This is Tom Brady. First offense, 4 games. Knock that down to 2 because it is his first offense. That's why I think this is going to be reduced.
Yeah, my reasoning's as simple as these are moneyed men in the NFL. They are rich. They got some deep pockets. And I can't remember the last time an appeals case didn't work out in one of their favors.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing is, the court system is just like football or basketball or any other sport. It's about winning and losing. And especially from a winner like Tom Brady, you better bet his lawyers could be the same. So, yeah, I think Tom Brady has the best lawyer there is. And I also agree with your logic as well. It's a first-time offense for somebody who's known as the golden boy of the NFL. The NFL doesn't want to come down too hard on him. They still want to sell the jerseys. They still want to sell the shirts. So,
right, exactly. Yeah. No, I definitely agree. And would you expect anything less from Tom Brady? I'm reading, you know, an article here on ESPN talking about the 10-hour hearing for the appeal. And, you know, some sources called it an A-plus performance. Sources actually told Adam Schefter of ESPN, NFL reporter for ESPN, that Brady came off as genuine, earnest, and persuasive, addressing every issue raised in the league sanctioned Wells report during Tuesday's long meeting. So basically, Tom Brady had an incredible team to prep him for how he was going to be questioned throughout this hearing. I'm not, you know, this is what Tom Brady is known for. He delivers A-plus performances on the field, and now look at him, even in the midst of controversy, he made sure that he was uber-prepared and made sure to back up each and every accusation accused by him, or against him, I should say, in that report. I'm not surprised. I think if they're calling this an A-plus performance and everything is positive that I'm hearing being reported from this 10-hour hearing, I don't see why they don't reduce this thing.
Whenever Tom Brady has time to prepare, whether it's an AFC Championship game where he has time to deflate the footballs a little bit or whatever,
right,
he's going to win. Because Tom Brady, you look at his history, he's got to be one of the most likable figures there is if you just go by the book. He was a sixth-round draft pick who wasn't even supposed to do anything in the NFL, who became maybe the best quarterback ever. You can make that debate. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Tom Brady's got everything going in his favor. He's got a model as his wife. He's, you know, and Tom Brady has life pretty figured out.
Yeah, and, but I think the biggest thing in this report, Isaac, is that they did not have any hardcore evidence that Brady was directly involved with this. They do have text messages from the two equipment managers, you know, kind of joking and throwing around different code names and code words that would, you know, if you, you know, anyone with common sense would, you know, figure out that this alluded to Tom Brady, you know, and the way he likes his balls deflated. I mean, anyone can pretty much dissect that and as to what that means. But at the same time, there was no direct evidence to trace directly to Tom Brady, which goes in his favor. If you don't have hardcore proof, it's hard. It's so hard to rule against someone. So I think that was the end all be all in really the straw that broke the camel's back for those that wanted to lay down the hammer on Tom Brady.
And what I would bet is that Brady might have said something like, okay, I like the footballs this way, no matter how you get
them. If
you
would have just been honest. Yeah, that's the thing with me. If you would have just been honest, if he knew how he liked the footballs and whatnot and came out and said, hey, this is what happened. I didn't know this went against the grain of the rules. It happened, though. What's up? I think, you know, the public perception as to this whole case would have been totally kind of switched on his rear end and would have changed from something that was really negative to one that was positive and really, you know, painted Tom Brady as just as an honest guy. You can't tell me that Tom Brady didn't know something. So interesting stuff, though. Interesting stuff. Our phone lines are open, folks. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, I'll be chatting with Vince Ellis, Detroit Pistons beat writer for the Detroit Free Press. Vince is going to talk about what he expects to happen in tomorrow's NBA draft, specifically with that number 8 pick from the Detroit Pistons. He'll also talk about the NBA hopes for former MSU greats Brandon Dawson and Travis Trice. All of that and so much more. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Beautiful people, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. I tell you what, folks, this is one of my favorite times of the year because the NBA draft is right around the corner. Tomorrow, there will be many NBA draft hopefuls packed inside of the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York, hoping again to make their long-time NBA dreams come true. And, you know, me being the big Detroit Pistons fan that I am, I'm really hoping that the Detroit Pistons come out with a great prospect, you know, someone who can come in and make an immediate impact. That's exactly what I'm sure Stan Van Gundy is looking for. And we have the privilege of welcoming right now to WKAR's Current Sports, Vince Ellis, Detroit Pistons beat writer for the Detroit Free Press. Vince, how you doing, my man?
Everything's good, Al. Enjoying this weather. It's not too warm, so I'm doing pretty good. Just sitting here doing a lot of pre-draft stuff, free agency stuff. So you know how it is this time of year. So I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, definitely. And again, talking about the weather, man, it has been absolutely gorgeous. I mean, other than what, you know, Hurricane Michigan that came through on Monday, you know, it's been gorgeous since then, especially a great day yesterday. But, you know, Vince, I want to talk about the draft. Let's dive right into it, you know, not beat around the bush here. Putting your pulse on the NBA. And from those you've talked to, I want to start with Brandon Dawson. From those you've talked to about Brandon Dawson, do you think BJ is getting drafted tomorrow?
I will admit I have not talked a lot about him. I have not. A lot of my efforts have been focused on, obviously, the Pistons' 8th pick and also the 38th pick, the second-round pick they have. But, you know, the problem with Brendan is, you know, he's going to be playing small forward. And as you know, with today's league, that guy tends to need to be a guy who can shoot the ball, spread the floor. And the fact he never made a three-point shot in his entire career at Michigan State. Mm-hmm. So it shows you he had a lot of work to do there. He's an athlete. He can rebound. He appears to be a willing defender, as my article stated. He got better at that stuff as he went along. But I think he has faces an uphill battle, uphill climb, to hear his name called tomorrow.
Yeah, and you know what? I found your article entitled Dawson's Maturity Could Carry Him to a Pro Hoops Career, published in the Detroit Free Press yesterday. I found it to be very compelling. And one thing that you highlight in your article is just the honesty of Brandon Dawson. I want to read a quick quote right here that you have in your article, Vince. Dawson went on to say, quote, "You have to be honest. I'm not going to tell the truth in our interviews. When I was in Chicago at the NBA Draft Combine, I talked to Draymond Green, that is, Adrian Payne and Gary Harris, and they told me to just tell the truth. Don't hide anything because they know everything anyway." Was that something that really stood out to you? Obviously, because you highlighted it in your article, but just talk about the honesty that Draymond had when you talked to him.
Well, you know, when you talked to him, it really stood out, you know. I think, if I can't remember correctly, that interview was probably like at least within the last couple of weeks, so my memory might be a little fuzzy. He was talking to several reporters after his workout with the Pistons, and I don't even think we even prompted him to even go that way, you know. And guys typically aren't as self-critical or self-aware of themselves. And, you know, he goes in there and tells about how he didn't take the game seriously when he first went to Michigan State. He talks about how Izzo's coaching sounded a little demanding in the beginning. He thought about transferring after a couple games. That type of honesty and that type of openness about someone's own shortcomings, I find very, very typically people pass the buck. They blame others for their shortcomings. And, you know, him taking responsibility probably went a long way in those NBA draft interviews. If nothing else, he'll be on someone's summer league roster. And, you know, he can go either way. He can decide to try to fight, develop his skills over in the D-League, or he can go overseas and make some money. So he'll be playing professional basketball next year. It's just a matter of where.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, Vince. And you highlighted some of those weaknesses again, you know, hitting the three-point shot. And at times, and this is something I always talked about, you know, when we would, you know, do our current sports radio show a day after a Michigan State men's basketball game, and just how Brandon Dawson just did not develop really an offensive repertoire as a player. What, when you look at the weaknesses and strengths of Brandon Dawson, what does he do well? What will you think he bring to an NBA table?
Well, he had athleticism, and sometimes athleticism is stuff you really can't teach. So, again, like I said, asking me to break down Brandon Dawson's game, you know, is kind of probably not my forte, because, like I said, I only watch Michigan State casually. I don't sit there and watch every Michigan State game because, frankly, I'm not a fan of Michigan State. I'm an Alabama basketball fan, so
oh,
I'm not
man.
From the state. So to ask me to break down this game is probably unfair to – I'm definitely unfair to Brandon. So, but I can just pass along the basis. The main concern is there is that he never developed an outside shot, as you just stated. And as he said himself, he did not take the game seriously enough. And he even said if he had took the game more seriously, maybe he would have developed that jump shot. Maybe he would have developed his offensive game. But, you know, it's pretty right there. You know, if you see him play, just like seeing him a few times, when you see him play during the Final Four.
Right.
I mean, he's a round-the-rim guy. And he's only 6'6", so he needs to be a small forward. So he's too small to be an around-the-rim guy in the NBA. So that's the issue.
Yeah, I certainly agree. And Vince, the Michigan State fans who listen to our show certainly forgive you. It's all good, brother, all right?
Now, I'm just being honest.
I love it.
Like Brandon Dawson.
Right.
You know?
I love it. Now, Vince, looking at another Spartan here briefly who you've also written about, Travis Trice, a player who is certainly an undersized guard, but in my opinion, really maxed out as a Spartan. You know, he really did what he could do with what he had. I mean, he turned out to be a great shooter. His intangibles of the game really hit its peak as well. What were your impressions when talking to Travis Trice?
Well, he's an understandable guy. He's an instantly likable guy. And I'm quite sure that's something you guys have picked up on being up there in East Lansing. Mm-hmm. But his size does stand out when you stand up next to him. He's small. Obviously, you don't realize how small these guys are. Watch them on TV until you're up close to them. And that's the thing he faces. He's an undersized point guard. He can move. He can move well. He has all the prototypical point guard stuff in front of a coach and everything. But, you know, guys his size in NBA, kind of a dime a dozen. So that's the hurdle he has to overcome. And, you know, that's one of the things I remember telling people when I remember Spartans fans and people start telling me, like, some of the guys that have come through there, like Kalen Lucas was a guy that he's a dime a dozen in the league. Hear what he does. And you know what? He hasn't been in the league. He hasn't got a sniff of the league yet. I remember an upstate Michigan fan telling me Trey Burke was going to be the superstar who was going to turn the league on its head. He's in the league, but he's barely in the league. I mean, Utah's already looking to try to get rid of him because they've already drafted the point guard of the future and a bigger guy, Dante Exum. So these small guys, unless they have these like amazing quicks or just sick athleticism, they're going to struggle in the NBA. They are, and that's what they are. And it's no knock on them, but they are what they are, though, you know.
Exactly. I mean, the game is so much bigger, stronger, faster. I mean, that's how it is. That's what you can expect. I mean, when moving to the pros. Again, folks, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are chatting with Vince Ellis, Detroit Pistons beat writer for the Detroit Free Press. All right, let's talk Pistons now, Vince. Again, they sit with the 8th pick in this year's NBA draft, and pretty much everywhere I'm going right now, you know, I spent this morning just kind of, you know, getting my feel for how many draft experts, quote unquote, and where they feel the Pistons are going to draft in this year's who are they going to draft? I should say in this year's draft, and I keep seeing this name. Hopefully I'm saying this right. Mario Hezonja, is that the right? Is that how you say it?
You're off, but asking me to say it right might be trouble too.
I'm
gonna go with Mario Hezonja.
Hezonja. Yeah, it's
a
silent J.
It's pronounced. But right. Again, if it's wrong, hey,
we'll get it right.
I don't really worry about it that hard,
right?
Until the Pistons take him. So
exactly. and that's the name, you know, Mario Hezonja. We'll roll with that one, Vince. I mean, shooting guard from Croatia. I'm hearing that he's a good athlete who can really shoot the ball, a prospect who can really, you know, provide it much needed help on the wing for Detroit. Is that the guy you see the Pistons drafting tomorrow?
Well, I don't think he's going to be there, so no, I don't. Other scouts have noticed this meteoric rise too, and just maybe there was a chance he might fall to 8, but apparently he just had this big game in the Spanish League playoffs just this past weekend.
Oh, wow.
But it's looking like he's not going to be there for the Pistons, but is he the pick? If he's there, it looks like it. But again, I don't think he's going to be there at number 8.
Now, I got to ask this, Vince, because, you know, when you look at international players.
Here we go.
Yeah, and I got to bring it up, Vince, because, okay, the big question here is just what level of competitiveness. When you look at international players, how big is that grain of salt do you have
to
look at?
Well, I'm going
to
tell you this. I'm going to cut you off. I apologize.
No, go ahead.
The Spanish league he plays in is better than college basketball.
It is better than college basketball. Why do you say that, Vince?
It is the second best league in the world, okay? It's just and you didn't bring up Darko, which I thought you were where you were headed.
I was going there.
But I will say this up front. If the team I was rooting for, and I don't root for the Pistons, I don't really have an NBA team.
Right.
If the team I was rooting for was making decisions based on a mistake from 12 years ago when scouting was more rudimentary and not nowhere near as sophisticated it is now, was making decisions based on a mistake made 12 years ago, I would want that front office of my favorite team fired. Because
right.
You're talking about you're ignoring a region of the world that have produced Pau Gasol, Marc Gasol, Tony Parker, Dirk Nowitzki, and the list goes on and on of these great pros who've come from Europe. But everybody around here was focused on that one guy the Pistons took 12 years ago. It would be ridiculous thinking, stupid thinking.
So this is legit. You think Mario Hezonja is going to be a guy who can come in and be a star in the NBA?
I have no way of knowing that. But I'm saying you cannot ignore a region of the world that has produced great pros. Mm. That'd be like, there was a while there that Duke was producing awful players.
Right.
But no one was saying they wouldn't go never draft someone from Duke again. I just think there's a prejudice against European players. Because you know what it is? You don't see the guy. And suddenly, this guy suddenly shows up on a mock draft in the top 10 and you've never seen him. So automatically, you're going to distrust it. But they've been scouting this guy since he was 15 years old. This is not just some guy like Darko who basically had one couple good workouts and suddenly was number two pick in the draft. They've been scouting these guys for years. And people want to point to all the busts that were international prospects, and I'll point to all the American players that were busts.
Yeah.
Like, let's talk about Anthony Bennett, who was number one overall pick a couple years ago. He's awful, okay?
Right.
He was number one pick overall. But no one says anything about him being a bust. They want to point to that one Arab national guy.
Right.
Was a bust. So
right.
It's just goofy. It's goofy thinking, but I understand it. You haven't seen the guy, so of course you're going to distrust it. But you got to trust the front office types who have seen this guy for the last 4 or 5 years and have an idea of whether the guy is talented to the NBA or not. I can't tell you if he's going to be a star or not, but I know pro scouts are in a better position to say that than we are. That's all I can say.
I love it. Very eloquently said, Vince. All right, so if Mario is not there at the 8th pick, which you don't expect possibly not to be, who do you think they should draft? Who's the next man up?
Well, I think Justice Winslow's the next guy up, but I don't think he's going to be there either. So I think as the mock draft that just was posted to Freak.com, I want to say within the last 2 hours, the guy I think the Pistons is going to wind up taking is Stanley Johnson. So...
Stanley Johnson. And what does he bring to the table for listeners who don't know?
Okay, well, if anyone who's a fan of college basketball, you know, Arizona made it to the finals. No, they made it to the regional final last year.
Yeah, regional final,
where they were beat by Wisconsin, if I remember correctly, correct?
Yep, believe so.
Exactly. Yes, yeah. Okay, so Stanley Johnson, he was a high school point guard, so he has a nice handle already. He's a guy that has a nice mid-range game. He can pull up. He's a guy that potentially is a small forward who can project a guy you can run pick and rolls with. So, in other words, he can help initiate offense. The knock is, you know, he shot it well from Arizona, but he's really not a shooter. So he shot like 38% from three last year with a longer three-point line. You're probably not going to get a guy who's going to stand in the corner and knock down threes for you. But, you know, he does have a variety of skill. He'd probably be a good defender. He projects to be a good defender. So, you know, so the Pistons will make the safe pick and go with him.
Okay, folks. All right. Well, we'll keep that guy on your radar, ladies and gents. Again, Stanley Johnson, possibly with the eighth overall pick to the Detroit Pistons. All right, Vince, two more things before I let you get out of here, okay?
Sure.
First off, you know, you bring up, you know, his three-point, you know, shooting statistics. And that's something that now, especially in today's game, that when you hear about or talk about the NBA in general, you have to be a good three-point shooting team, I believe, to compete, legitimately compete for NBA championships nowadays. I don't know if you saw the comments from Phil Jackson not too long ago and how he talked about how he thinks the NBA is really changing for the worse. I mean, he brought the example of how in today's game, you know, he watched this season in particular where LeBron James is basically the Cavs' offense was everybody get the ball to LeBron James, everybody just stand around and watch what he does, and he creates that way. For Golden State, I mean, my goodness, I mean, you saw the NBA Finals. They shot, you know, at least 33-pointers each and every game. Do you think with the importance, you know, when looking at how the NBA over the years, with the importance of the three-point line coming more and more into play, is this healthy for basketball?
I will say this. The NBA is probably more popular than it's ever been before. TV ratings would say that.
Mm-hmm.
But Phil Jackson took some heat because, you know, he's coming from a place where so far he's done a horrible job of running the Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the sense of what he was saying, for me personally, I do think basketball, for me, was more enjoyable to watch when I was coming up. Back when you had more of a variety of offenses, you know, you had centers like Hakeem Olajuwon. You could just throw it into the low post and let them go to work, doing things like the dream shake. And I remember the iconic image of him giving that up fake to David Robinson, and David Robinson going up and coming down like he was in a parachute,
right?
And hit the jump hook over him. You don't see things like that anymore. You had the triangle. You had motion offenses. And you had to pick and roll. Then you had these more seem like more free-flowing offenses that did more things. Than now, basically, what everybody does runs, they run pick and roll, and three guys spread out around the three-point line, mm-hmm. and they run pick and rolls all day. And I do think every game takes on a sameness.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand kind of what Phil Jackson is saying, but, you know, it's lost in the fact that the Knicks are awful, and it appears like he has no clue what he's doing. So,
right.
but I agree with him. I actually think the game was more watchable back in the day. I do. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of old school hoops myself. All right, Vince. All right, really quickly, you know, you just said that you know, individuals can go to freep.com right now to look at your NBA mock draft. Can you give us your top five real quick?
Ooh, shoot! You put me on the spot because I'm not near my computer. But I will say this:
okay,
it's number one would be Karl Anthony Towns.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is Okafor. Number three, Russell. Number four was Porzingis, and number five was Hezonja. That's what it was.
There you go. All right, Vince Ellis, again of the Detroit Free Press. He is a beat writer for the Detroit Pistons. Vince, always a pleasure. Thanks for your time, my man.
Thanks, man. Glad to do it. Happy on any time.
You know it. Vince Ellis, the one, the only. Gotta love him, right? All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will put a bow on today's current sports by taking, I guess you could say, putting our hand on the pulse of the NBA's draft rumor mill and bringing you some of the top NBA draft busts of all time. You don't want to miss that, all right, folks? You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, happy hump day, folks. A lot to really dissect and take away from Vince Ellis of the Detroit Free Press, who just joined us before that second break. Of course, Vince is a beat writer for the Detroit Pistons with Freep. And, you know, interesting points to take away. You know, I really found his take on international players to be quite interesting. What did you think of you know, his take as far as really vying for international players and the notion of how many of them are bust and you haven't really seen them that much? I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Isaac?
Well, Al, I think he's got a point. I think he's spot on in that you can't just say, oh, this guy's international, don't draft him until the second round,
mm-hmm.
because there have been some great international players in NBA history. However, I think a lot of them still are up in the air. And he's right, maybe we just haven't seen as much of them, but a lot of these international players, you can't see them like you do college. If you look up their highlights, if you look up their team's games, it's tough to find video. And these players just get some hype rolling, such as Dante Exum last year,
mm-hmm.
and move up and up the standing. So I think it's always the safer pick to go with the American prospect, although there are, without a doubt, these greater national players who have developed into NBA stars, and I personally think Hezonja will be one. However, I think the person who I can pull up his name for you, I couldn't be able to pronounce it, but it's the guy that the Knicks are projected to take,
mm-hmm.
I think he's overhyped, just from what I've seen. But I think Hezonja is going to be a star.
You're talking about Kristaps Porzingis?
That's why I didn't want to say it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's who Vince actually had him in his mock draft on Freep.com right now. He has the Knicks taking Kristaps, who's 19 years old from Spain, with that fourth overall pick. And I agree. I think when you – you know, one guy I wanted to bring up, but we ran out of time, I wanted to bring up on Vince, Luigi Datome. I mean, he was the MVP of the Italian League. I remember when the Pistons talked about how they had a lot of interest in him and they were thinking about signing him. I went on and looked at his highlight reel, and he was unbelievable. He could shoot the basketball. He's taking it and driving it in. He's got a great first step. And then what happens? He gets to the Detroit Pistons and basically rides the bench throughout his entire career. And I'm sitting there saying, what in the world? And first off, I really can't make a really valued opinion on Gigi Datome's game. One, because I've only seen highlights of him playing in the Italian league. And two, I really think, Isaac, that he didn't get a chance to really let his wings, spread because he didn't get any playing time with the Detroit Pistons. So it's hard to make a clear evaluation. But again, I agree. I think when you and again, I don't know if I may need to take another look at Spain basketball because Vince Ellis is saying that Spain basketball is better than college basketball. I don't know if I can completely agree with that, knowing how fast paced and how how crazy the American game is. But I will say, if you remember, Kobe Bryant made this statement. He believes that international players are more fundamentally sound. Just, when looking at how American basketball is and how there's no structure and no discipline in it, at the youth level. So maybe he has a case there. Maybe he doesn't. Again, in order for me to side either way on that, I would really have to sit down and watch Spain basketball and really to really compare the two.
Well, I've watched a little bit of Spanish basketball. And first off, I do think it's the best league in Europe. I agree 100% on that.
Better than college basketball.
Better. I think the better players, I think, are in college basketball than in Spain. However, I think, by and large, the overall product is better in Spain. You've got a lot of great shooters, and you just talk about players that are fundamentally sound. Everybody in Europe can pass it very well. They can shoot it extremely well. But there's that lack of physicality and athleticism. Mm-hmm. There's that gap, and that's what a lot of foreign players – that's why a lot of foreign players struggle to adapt. For example, Andrea Bargnani is the prime example. Somebody who just can't, who's 7-1 and can't rebound more than 4 times a game. So that's the problem with the transition.
Exactly. All right. Well, we only got 2 minutes left here in the show. Isaac, if you had to give or predict, I should say, I shouldn't say predict. You're not predicting anything. If you had to give, when you look at, NBA history, your biggest draft bust of all time, who would it be?
Let's see. Well, I might actually have to go with Greg Monroe, considering...
Of all time?
No, not Greg Monroe. I am so sorry.
Greg Monroe's pretty good in the NBA. Greg Oden. Okay.
And it's because of injuries, but when you look at who that number two pick is, that's Kevin Durant. So
right.
Even though because of injuries, I might have to go with Greg Oden.
Gotcha. All right, for me, I have to probably go with Sam Bowie. Sam Bowie, Portland's Trailblazers, number two pick in 1984. We all know what happened to Sam Bowie. He had injury problems eventually. And, interesting documentary on this because, I don't know if you've seen this. I think the NBA TV did this documentary, and it talked about how, Sam Bowie was just this crazy talented guy in college and, how he was going to be really a phenom. 7'1", what could go wrong, right? Gets injured, and he was only able to manage 139 games in 5 years with Portland. And also, there's some guy named,
there's somebody behind him.
Michael Jordan, I think. You ever heard of that name? Yeah.
Rings a bell.
So there you have that. It had to be mine. All right, folks, we unfortunately are out of time. I want to give thanks again to Vince Ellis, Detroit Pistons beat writer for the Detroit Free Press, for joining me on today's show. Thanks to all of you out there for tuning in to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have one fantastic hump day, and be easy, people.